20 years ago today, President George H.W. Bush signed one of the most historic bills of his presidency, the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Today's legislation brings us closer to that day when no Americans will ever again be deprived of their basic guarantee of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
But like every bill, every piece of major legislation, Todd, and you know this, and we've talked about this on The Takeaway, they're all troubled. I mean, they all have their strengths and their weaknesses.
Yeah, there's one thing in the lab of Congress, and it's completely another thing in the real world.
Well, we needed an expert to tell us, to kind of give us a look back at the ADA, and we actually have one. John Hockenberry joins us, even though he's still technically on vacation. Thanks for cutting short your vacation, at least for a little bit, John.
Well, it's great. It's great to be here, Celeste. Actually, this was always a working day for me. I'm on my way to Boston to a major rally. There's rallies all over the country for commemoration of this anniversary. And, you know, I think, you know, it's true, as you say, once a bill, particularly one with as many abstract notions of liberty in it as the ADA had, hits the reality of the real world, it's a whole different story. And the ADA had, and I write about this at thetakeaway.org, you know, the ADA had a very humble beginning. It was a bipartisan bill, largely because a lot of the enforcement teeth that were envisioned by the legislative sponsors, including Tom Harkin of Iowa, still in the Congress, Senator Tony Coelho, who was a congressman at the time, a lot of people who will actually be at the White House today, Marco Bristow, an activist from the Chicago area, envisioned a much tougher bill, and it was very much, you know, the enforcement was left to the courts, to the civil courts. And that initial controversy, I think, set the stage for the stories that were subsequently of the ADA, particularly in the early years.
Well, we should say that you suffered a spinal cord injury when you were 19 years old. You've been in a wheelchair since then. And I want to ask you, you had negative feelings about the bill when it was first passed. Was it because of this enforcement part?
I think, you know, for me, the issue was, and I, you know, I spent many years in a wheelchair before the ADA and could see the kind of ad hoc a patchwork quilt of accommodations laws that would attempt to give you parity here and there. Education was a place that was really troublesome. I actually changed college because the accommodations were so bad at my original school after I went back to it. So the idea of the ADA was something I very much welcomed. But, you know, the ADA said at the time that the enforcement would be the result of individual victims who felt aggrieved filing lawsuits in civil court. And as I imagined, you know, the civil rights history, if those people who had confronted George Wallace on the steps of the University of Alabama in 1963, instead of having the National Guard behind them, only had, you know, a civil complaint as African Americans to hand to the civil authorities, what would have happened, you know, without the teeth of the American National Guard and federal legal system behind it as a criminal matter, which is what the Civil Rights Act was? You know, what would have happened to civil rights if it had just been a civil issue? 20 years hence, I think a lot of benefits of that strategy of enforcement have emerged, but I didn't really realize them at the time.
Well, you know, you've traveled a lot internationally, and I'm sure there's some places which are easier to get around for someone in a wheelchair than others. But are there countries that have designed better enforcement systems?
Well, I think the ADA, the real miracle of the ADA is that it asks a very simple question. It says, who do we want to be in our communities, in mainstream? Who do we want to have mainstream participation in our communities? And what are we going to do to achieve that? And I think if you travel around the world, there are nations that have a sense of kind of we're all in this together, that enforces a kind of, you know, ability to improvise accommodations at the time, and I had great experiences in the Middle East. Northern Europe, it has a tradition of design, and so they think very clearly about how they're going to design their communities to make them physically accessible. But I think the ADA really says, community by community, are we going to make places accessible or not? Are we going to include people or not? And that's a really important advance in the civil rights agenda, because it simplifies the issue of inclusion. And I think over 20 years, that has had really enormous benefits, well beyond disability.
Well, John, back in this country, you know, about 6 months ago, you were in D.C., and I wanted to take you to my favorite Malaysian restaurant. We couldn't go because it has steps down, and there is no way for you to get in there. And it makes me want to ask you, despite the ADA, what's missing in society now in terms of access? What is it really, in your mind, not been improved enough in terms of quote-unquote disabled people's ability to participate fully? What's really missing?
Well, you know, and I have to say that not going to a Malaysian restaurant with you, Todd, is down there with one of the most deeply hurtful moments
tragedy.
In my life.
Tragedy.
So I will never recover from that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, to focus on the broad agenda, I think the principal contribution of the ADA is there's this developing consensus that places need to be accessible, or even people who are not disabled understand, hey, there's something wrong here. And, you know, we're just beginning to get to that point where that consensus is mainstream. And I think that begins to force people who have steps, who don't have elevators, who haven't made accommodations. And again, we're only talking about the physically disabled. There are millions of people with mental disabilities, hidden disabilities, people who are cancer survivors, who all have ADA-related grievances that need to be redressed.
And yet, to a certain extent, John, the Civil Rights Bill is a simpler proposition in some ways. And what I mean by that is that simply says you can't discriminate based on the color of somebody's skin. The ADA had to, even though it's just addressing physical disabilities, that covers a huge range of different accommodations for people who have visual problems.
That's the genius of the ADA. I mean, the Civil Rights Act sort of says, okay, we're all equal now, boom. And the individual workings out of the personalities and the racial prejudices and the narratives of that are left to individuals. The ADA, it's just in reverse. We've got to make things accessible, and it's going to be different for 32 million people, and we're going to have to take the steps to address
right.
each one individually. In a way, it's kind of completing the circle of what the Civil Rights Act is about. What are you going to do? Okay, fine. I love what you say. But what are you going to do? And that's what the ADA really focuses on.
But on the balance, John, things are better since the ADA
absolutely.
Passed?
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. Things are definitely better. I mean, 20 years ago, to use a public restroom, I'd look for a hospital emergency room because that was the only place I could definitely find one. Nowadays, that's not the issue. But that's just for someone in a wheelchair. There are all kinds of issues for people with all kinds of disabilities that have changed for the better.
Well, that is John Hockenberry. You can head over to the Takeaway blog. You can read a few of his thoughts on the ADA. Get some details also about the speech that he is keynoting later today in Boston. Good luck with that, John.
Thanks, and see you tomorrow, Celeste.
See you tomorrow. That's at thetakeaway.org/blogs. John, by the way, Todd's been using your thermos all week.
Yeah, well, great. He'll be in the hospital all next week.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.